we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a tip from an NHS leaflet on irritable bowel syndrome, read by Alan Smith.
If you're having difficulties when trying to pass a motion, it may help if you place your feet on a stool.
Our thanks to Mary Gold for getting to the bottom of that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Vicky Pepperdine? And opposite them on my left, Mark Steele and Susan Kalman. So, Francis, who's made a big mistake?
Ah, it's our old friend Brexit. It's going to go on forever. You think we're bored with it now. Imagine what it's going to be like in 30 years' time on the news quiz when news quiz panellists yet unborn are going to be asked these questions. How's Brexit going? I think we're moving towards negotiating a trade deal with Europe, but it all took a step back when the Walloons kicked up rough, and it's going to go on forever. The only light relief is going to be people getting the word wrong on Thursday this week, as it might be yesterday or the day before if you're listening to the repeat, or 30 years ago if you're on Radio 4 Extra. John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor, made a speech. He was reading out his lines and he said very solemnly, thanks to this government's irresponsibility, we're hurtling towards a chaotic and damaging breakfast. And the leader of the Welsh Tories did that at the Tory conference last month, this breakfast Brexit lark. And I thought, actually, it's going to happen more and more often, because now when people say Brexit, they're going to be telling us, mustn't say breakfast, because actually, I think we've all had chaotic and damaging breakfasts in our time. I keep thinking to myself now, breakfast, Brexit, breakfast, and it's going to be just like Radio 4 presenters who have to talk about Jeremy Hunt. So, God's sake. It's been yet another week in Brexit. It's so exciting that actually the Walloons made the front pages of the newspapers, and the only other excitement was Theresa May, which I think the question might have been about. Well, The Guardian got very excited. They had a scoop. What she said privately to some bankers in the city just before the referendum was that she was in favour of Remain and that she thought Brexit was a bad idea. Whereas what she said in public was that she was in favour of Remain and she thought Brexit was a bad idea. But actually, the really newsworthy bit was where she delivered this speech, which was Goldman Sachs. And that's the same bank where Hillary Clinton delivered her speeches a few years ago that caused such a fuss. She was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, Hillary Clinton, whereas Theresa May does it for nothing. But it does look a bit embarrassing for her, given all that stuff in her conference speech about how we're for the many, not the few. Then she goes and gives a private speech to the few and saying, she says something like, the international elites, the fat cats, I'm coming after you. And what she meant, it now turns out, was, I'm coming after you because I was rather wondering if you'd like me to come to your boardroom and give you a little speech. So that's about it, really. And the good news is that growth is a bit bigger than expected, 0.5% in the last quarter, and Nissan are going to build some more cars in Sunderland. And the bad news is that Jeremy Corbyn attempted a joke at Prime Minister's Questions, but he won't be doing that again. It was something to do with Baldrick. And he made the mistake of prefacing it by saying, I spent 2 days thinking of this.
Goldman Sachs, they've got this programme, Talks at GS, in which high achievers reflect on
their
successes.
Yeah, they're usually some people who've climbed Everest or something like
that. Yeah, well, the person before her was Lloyd Grossman. The Guardian described the man behind the eponymous sources.
Well, I think it's quite funny that there's this sort of perception that what you say to bankers stays in the room. Yeah. What happens at Goldman Sachs stays at Goldman Sachs.
There's a lot of people that voted to leave and then almost immediately regretted it. And I do feel sorry for them, because if only there'd been some sort of indication that a vote for leave was going to be counted as a vote for leave. There was one thing I saw, this one article, I can't remember where I saw it. It said, now we don't have to take any notice of nonsense such as the European Water Directive. And I thought, that's a funny thing to get cross about. So I looked it up, and this is the body from Europe that says that your water has to be a certain level of cleanliness. So there's people going, no one from Germany is going to tell me my water can't be full of maggots. I want to be on the pan all day with gastroenteritis. Doing it through the eye of a needle, kicking me guts out because my team's full of globules and raw sewage. I can if Merkel says I can or not.
last a voice for reason.
Yeah. And old people, I know we can think, oh, don't think it's all the old people, but it was quite a lot of them. The bit I'm looking forward to is in the care homes when someone has to go, Mrs. Watkins, it's about your cataract operation Tuesday. Yeah, it's not going to be done by Dr. Patel anymore because of the vote. He's had to go back to India. It's going to be done by Nathan. He's got a B-tech in nail care. What this country did in the summer, we're England, we don't need no one else, we used to run the world, we're better than anyone else, we're on it. And then 3 days later, lost to Iceland, that's what we did.
I'd like to say just publicly, if anyone wants to pay me £100,000 to speak to some bankers, I am available. I can't guarantee what it is I'll say to you, but I am quite literally willing to do virtually anything for £100,000. I wouldn't, you know, neglect my principles, but I would put them aside. I'm absolutely there for you. I will be your private dancer. I will dance for money.
Fastidiously, this is the leaked audio published by The Guardian, which revealed that Theresa May was an even bigger fan of the EU than she let on. Mrs. May made these comments at a secret meeting of investment bankers, a phrase sure to gladden the heart of anyone who's suspicious about the way the world is organised. Mrs. May said before the referendum that businesses would leave. Now she says they won't, which leaves us with only two possibilities. Either she's changed her mind, or there are two Theresa Mays, one who only speaks the truth and the other who only lies. One of them guards the path to future prosperity, one of them the path to stagnation, and you only get to ask one of them one question. 2 points to Francis. Vicky, who's leaving over a jet plane?
This is about Heathrow Airport, third runway, and that's now been given the backing of the government, and that's going to go ahead. So there's a bit of a confusion, because with all the Brexit and everything, I thought we didn't really want people to come here, and my concern is that building an extra runway is going to be giving out a sort of misleading message. But apparently, I think what's happened is that the Transport Secretary has tried to put a fun spin on it all, suggesting that this third runway is in fact a ramp over the M25. You know, he's obviously sitting in his bedroom and playing with his Skelextric and thought, how can I make this runway a bit more fun, came up with this idea. So I think the idea is that you pull the plane back sharply to give it some traction and it shoots off up into the air. What he said was that this idea of building this runway over the M25 was going to be cheaper and quicker than building a tunnel under the runway.
And planes having to take off from underneath
the motorway.
That's it, they become
sort of, that's it, a couple of Thunderbirds, essentially. I mean, I personally for phrases like reassuringly expensive when I'm talking about air travel, but, you know, that's a personal choice, really. And I suppose my main worry is what happens if the airplane that's about to take off actually falls off onto the M25, because really that will cause a tailback. and then, oh, yes, there's a bit of furore, obviously, because it's an unpopular decision and Zach Goldsmith has given up his seat. But, he's forced a by-election in Richmond Park, which... if you're going to have a by-election, nice place to have it. Take a thermos of tea, some sandwiches, and try and avoid Fenton.
I'm terrified of flying. Absolutely terrified of airplanes. Oh, yeah. I've had hypnotherapy to try and get over it. The last thing I want to hear is, we're now approaching the ramp. And neither do I want a plane taking off from inside a tunnel. Neither of those things. But I watched Chris Grayling and he was awfully chipper about it, wasn't it? He was like, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be amazing. It's going to really help connectivity in the whole UK. It's going to help everyone in the whole UK. And I'll tell you now, that's not going to help me get the bus into Glasgow city centre.
Heathrow's huge and it feels like you've walked so far that you think, oh, when I get out the other end, have I got to Tunisia then? It's just... I went from Guernsey to Alderney, right? This tiny little plane last year in the Channel Islands. And it's 10 minutes, this flight. And this, I don't mind the plane was small. I thought, all right, it's only 10 minutes, I'll put up with it. But it was like, you know, when you get someone's car and it's a really old car and every bit of it off the hinges and there was all bits of holes in the ceiling where kids have gone with a biro and no one's bothered. And it was a right state and the window flapped. So the draft come in while you were in the air. And there was an East European pilot and there was 12 seats and the equivalent of the sort of, here is your exits here and here and all that, the equivalent was he just turned around and said, much wind today, so very much bumpy. And that was...
Last time I was on a flight to Dublin, it was a gale force wind, and I was a bit terrified, and I started crying quite quickly into the journey, which I think is always reassuring for the other passengers. So I started crying, and I sing to take my mind off it. And unfortunately, I sing quite a hardcore gangster rap song. Anyway, I was singing this quite explicit rap song, and the guy next to me went, "Oh, are you Susan Kalman?" And I went, "Yes, I am." And he went, "How's the news quiz?" And I said, "It's fine." And he was very sweet, actually. He was a nurse who saw I was in distress and simply asked me questions about the news quiz for the next 35 minutes. And is Miles a nice man?
And you're sort of dispersing that with bits from Notorious B.I.G.
Yes.
Macrocosmically, this is the news that Zach Goldsmith has resigned as an MP due to his environmental concerns over Heathrow. The resulting by-election could well result in the election of a Liberal Democrat MP, so Zach's certainly doing his bit to help one endangered species. The third runway would cause the widespread displacement of many local people, creating a power vacuum which will inevitably lead to the rise of ISIS in the Harmondsworth area. Chris Grayling has said that the new runway could involve planes taking off from the M25, which, while terrifying, will certainly add a much-needed frisson of excitement to Radio 2's traffic and travel. Three villages will be destroyed to make way for the new runway. Interestingly, the government planned to destroy these villages using a bulldozer rather than the traditional method of simply closing down any nearby industry. 2 points to Vicky. Mark, who's going to start World War III?
Well, Hillary Clinton, according to Trump, but this is just sort of... The terrible thing with this now is that Trump can just say anything and it's not at all surprising. It's like going into the local park and seeing a bloke with a tin of special brew going, "Come over here, you wet myself, dry me crotch with a tea towel. Who's going to pay for the tea towel? The Mexicans are going to pay for the tea towel." And going, "Oh, marvellous news, only 40% of America is going to vote for him as the most powerful man on the planet."
I started following Donald Trump on Twitter, and it's an extraordinary experience because his tweets are almost incomprehensible. They're like a clue over a cryptic crossword or a clue from... Do you remember 3-2-1, the show 3-2-1, where you could never quite understand how to win the Ford Fiesta? It's... When you read them, you have to spend ages going, "What? I don't... Where's the pirate? I don't know what's going on." And it's a difficult decision for the Americans, really, to vote for Clinton, who could potentially take them into conflict, because she's talking about no-fly zones, which could bring her into direct conflict with the Russians, or a man who would be rejected from a Trump impersonation competition for being a bit too much. No one has more respect for women than he does, though.
No,
that's actually scientifically proven. That is true. But it shows how we've moved on, because you remember about 40 years ago when Jimmy Carter was running for the presidency, the biggest scandal of the campaign was when he said in an interview that he had once or twice in his life looked on women with lust in his heart. And this outrage went on for the rest of the campaign. How could he do such a thing? And it really was quite damaging for him. Once or twice. I mean, now Trump says what he says, and people say, "Oh, yeah, well, that's what they do these days, isn't it?"
Yeah, I think Farage said he's not running for Pope. Yes. So that was sort of, yes. You know... Great, well, get on with it then.
Also, it was 11 years ago. He was only 58. I mean, we all do things
in our...
youth that we regret. You can't, can't hold someone to account for things they did back when they were 58.
One of the things that's most distressing is... I saw a picture of a woman at a Trump rally and she had drawn on her own T-shirt. I always think it looks very professional when you draw on your own T-shirt. She'd drawn on her own T-shirt, "Trump can grab this," and drawn an arrow. And you look at it and think, maybe we should just leave them to burn.
Swimmingly, this is the claim that a Clinton presidency would lead to World War III, made by Republican candidate and friend of the show, Donald J. Trump. The trouble is that Clinton and Putin, they don't get on, and you have to say, what is wrong with her? He's clearly one of the good guys. Sometimes he'll send neighbouring countries, unprompted and unasked for, a whole load of tanks, simply out of the goodness of whatever he has instead of a heart. I mean, how can she not get that? She should be in jail. Trump has said that Clinton's foreign policy would trigger World War III, whereas his plan would trigger World War IV, which I think we can all agree is literally one better. 2 points to Mark. Susan, whose expenses have proved expensive?
Labour has been fined £20,000 by the Electoral Commission for failing to declare all of its general election expenses. It was about £123,000 and they forgot to put in. The exciting thing is that from this, we finally know exactly how much the Ed Stone costs. Remember those great... Remember, do you ever think back in fondness about Ed Miliband? Not really. And the thing is, I now know how much it costs to get an 8'6", 2-ton slab of limestone with things written on it for the garden. And it's £7,614. You can't say no to that. I don't think you can get it at your regular garden centre. I think you might have to send away maybe to Amazon for it, but it's not the only case that's come forward, but I think it's one of those rules that you're meant to tell people exactly how much you spend, and they didn't.
Does this count as electoral fraud, or is this electoral incompetency?
I think incompetence, absent-mindedness, that sort of thing. But he might, you know, now could be his time, Ed, I think. Now, all this week, I've been so excited seeing all these conservative American websites with pictures of Miliband all over them, with a circle around him on the photo saying, identified Hillary Clinton's hitman and procurer. Mm. Somehow they saw a picture of Bill Clinton, I think it must have been at the Olympics opening ceremony or something, shaking hands with Nick Clegg, and there was Miliband a couple of seats along, and they had this big white circle around him saying, identified, this is Hillary's hitman. The man who pimps for her. And says, no wonder he lost the election. Poor chap, he couldn't have gone to sleep. Must have been exhausted.
What else were they spending money on, Labour?
Well, there were lots of merchandise. I think there were various T-shirts with an arrow pointing downwards saying...
Yeah. Give me Ed.
Acrobatically, this is the largest fine in Electoral Commission history, £20,000, which was levelled at the Labour Party for failing to declare all of its 2015 general election expenses. To be honest, Labour would have done just as well taking all the money they spent in 2015 and putting it on a horse. Even a horse that on closer inspection turned out not to be a horse at all, but a dead St Bernard on which someone had optimistically fixed a saddle. £7,000 of this money was spent on the Ed Stone, Ed Miliband's list of policy pledges carved in granite. Labour have promised not to make the same mistake again. At the next election, the list of pledges will instead be tattooed onto the body of a surprisingly up-for-it John McDonnell. Still, the £20,000 fine handed out to Labour is the largest ever imposed in the history of the Electoral Commission, sparking joyous celebrations amongst supporters who had long given up hope of the party coming first in anything ever again. 2 points to Susan. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Susan have 4, but Francis and Vicky have 5. Yay. We start round two with a poster spotted at the Theatre Royal in Brighton.
Adapted and directed by Philip Breen, Lady Chatterley's Lover. Coming soon.
Our thanks to Martin Lightowler for sending us that accidental bit of filth. Francis, who is not impressed?
I'm not impressed. Would that do?
Yep, 2 points.
There's a government-financed thing called the Press Recognition Panel, which has had the cushiest job in the world for the last couple of years, because they've got about £3 million from the government in a very natty office building designed by Richard Rogers, and they've had absolutely nothing to do because they're meant to be approving press regulators, and there haven't been any approved press regulators. So once a year, they put out an annual report saying, well, we've had a look, but there don't seem to be any press regulators that we've approved yet, so can we get on with planning our Christmas party and our next outing? And then this week, finally, they approved a regulator, an outfit called Impress, which is mainly financed by Max Mosley via a Mosley family trust. I mean, a couple of other people who've given a little bit of money. J.K. Rowling is one of them, but it's mainly a Max Mosley enterprise, a Mosley enterprise. And he's given £3.8 million to this thing, Impress, which set itself up as a regulator. And apart from, you know, the main challenge was, we don't want the press to be regulated by all these vested interests and people, you know, mega-rich press barons. We want it to be mega-rich Formula One barons instead. They're so much more reasonable about these sorts of things. They don't bear any grudge against newspapers just because of that unfortunate business with the women and the dungeon and the stuff. Anyway, the Mosleys are backing this Impress thing, and it hasn't done terribly well so far in signing up publications. It's got, I think, about just over a dozen so far that it's approved, and they're mainly the odd parish magazine in the Western Isles, and I think there's a website in Nottinghamshire, and the Brixton Bugle, mainstream media scum. There's an outfit called View in Belfast, which says it's a social affairs magazine. And I looked at the current issue, and the cover headline is Art Washes Away from the Soul the Dust of Everyday Life. And I was so tempted to complain to Impress about this. So, as a completely unsubstantiated, art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life. They have any evidence of this whatsoever, any multiple sources? No, they do not. They just print any old thing that comes to their head, think they can get away with it. Well, not so. Now they've signed up with Impress, they have to face the consequences or they'll lose their kite mark of quality. The thing is that Karen Bradley, a very famous person who is apparently the culture secretary, to everyone's amazement, I don't even know any Tory MPs who've ever heard of her or met her. It's extraordinary. But she has somehow become the culture secretary, and she surfaced briefly this week to say that she wouldn't yet be triggering Section 40, not to be confused with Article 50, or indeed Fun Boy 3, or all those other lovely word number combinations, level 42. And Article Section 40 is the bit of the 2013 Act that says when it's triggered, if you haven't signed up for, as it now is, Impress, then terrible punitive things will happen to you. But if you have signed up, you can't go wrong. Even if you print the foulest libels, if they stop printing all this blither about art washing away the dust from your soul, if they started running the most libelous stories about blameless individuals and got sued, even if they lost, that magazine wouldn't have to pay any of the costs, either its own or the other side's, because that's how it works if your government approves.
I think the marvellous thing there is not only has Francis won 2 points on the news quiz, he's also become the world champion of just a minute.
Hedonistically, this is the news that Max Mosley's Impress has been approved as the UK's first state-sanctioned press regulator. Impress aimed to put fairness and accuracy at the heart of Britain's news reportings. Anyone who doesn't sign up to Impress will have to pay the costs of anyone who brings a libel action against them, whether they win or lose, which sounds like an absolutely terrible idea. Although, legally, I'd probably be better advised to describe it as wonderful. Newspapers will be so frightened of losing money in court, they won't print anything controversial about anyone, which sounds bad, but on the upside, people will be able to do whatever they like to, for instance, goats, and they won't be able to touch you for it. It's a goat lover's charter, basically. 2 points to Francis. Vicky, what new property is to die for?
This morning I thought, well, I'm going on the news because I better have a look at the news. And so I opened my laptop. And I'll have a look. And then I opened my laptop, and the minute you open anything, you sort of get bombarded with that sort of sidebar of shame thing, you know, that thing where it says, you wrinkly old cow, get some cream and paste your face up.
This was the Financial Times.
Yeah, yeah. That's the very one. And then there was something about belly fat, which, you know, I thought, God, I've got to cover up this webcam. But anyway, so I did find this story. Burial mounds are back in fashion. I must admit, I got sidetracked trying to find the news by this strapline that said, the real reason we don't read about Paris Hilton anymore. And I thought, you know, what is the real reason? What is the real reason? And I couldn't find it because I clicked on it. It said, you'll be amazed what the original stars of Zed cars look like now. Yeah. And, you know, and that catapulted me into a sort of 10 interesting facts about cheese, which weren't that interesting. Wrinkle cream came up again. I panicked and bought a pot of repointing face paste or something. Which I hope works. And then I finally got through to this Zed cars thing, and it turns out they're all dead. Which I suppose I should have, you know, it wasn't a surprise. That was quite a long time ago. But anyway, then that did link me back to this burial mound story, which, against the odds, I saw on my computer. So burial mounds are back in fashion. Apparently it's a sort of a dome thing, and there are niches where you can put your loved ones.
What? I don't understand what it is.
It's sort of like a dome. It's like a sort of...
What, and you're just piled up?
Like a sort of stacking system for urns, essentially. Yeah.
So,
but
you know,
it's quite sort of craft and stone.
When you see
made.
Those car parks in London, where they stack the cars up and move them
with
round.
The bodies
it's very much like
we
that.
We cannot remember where we parked Alfred.
But it's something... It's interesting to think, because I just made a will... because I think it's an important thing to do, and I want to be cremated, and I was thinking about where I wanted my ashes to be scattered, because I don't necessarily want my ashes just sitting on the mantelpiece, do you know what I mean, just kind of being there all the time. I mean, I want my wife to keep them for a while and mourn deeply, obviously, but after 20 years or so, she should probably get rid of them.
Are you going to have them stirred in with the cat litter?
Yeah. Where do I spend the most time? And I calculated I spend most of my time at Euston Station. So I've literally put in my will, please scatter my ashes at Euston Station. So if anything happens to me, look out for that outside the Burger King about 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, good. And then, because of you, there'll be an announcement. I'm afraid that the 4:31 to Watford has been delayed due to ashes on the line.
Finally, this is the news that prehistoric stone tombs used to store the ashes of loved ones are being built in Britain for the first time in thousands of years. Personally, I much prefer to bury our dead the traditional way, in the ground, shortly before tarmacking a third runway over the top of them. At least that way it's slightly trickier for them to rise up out of their tombs to once more do battle with the living, which, as any undertaker worth their salt will tell you, is quite the occupational hazard. I suppose this is the beginning of hipster burials. It costs between £2,000 and £5,000, but I think that's a small price to pay to have somewhere for your loved ones to come and sit and remember how you used to be such a poser. Of course, this is a far more eco-friendly way of disposing of a corpse than many other methods, such as cremating a body by spraying a full can of Lynx Africa through an open flame. 2 points to Vicky. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Vicky.
Yes, I've got one. This is taken from the Warrington Free Cycle Circular. It says, wanted, small fridge. I need a small fridge big enough for one elderly person. Thanks, Bob. And that's sent by somebody called Linda Heaven.
Mark.
Right, this is sent in by Rahul Joshi, and it's from a fish and chip shop in Tunbridge, Kent. Gluten-free Mondays at Saltwaters. Gluten-free fish and chips available. Fried in batter containing no gluten ingredients. All fried fish available in gluten-free batter. All due care is taken with your order, but it may contain gluten.
Now let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Vicky have 9, but this week's winners are Mark and Susan with 10. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Hitchin Comet, sent in by Judith Duggan.
Cats Protection offers a free neutering service for people on low incomes to halt excessive breeding.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wien, Vicky Pepperdine, Mark Steele and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair's script was written by Max Davis, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Dan Kiss and Robin Morgan. The producer was Paul Sheehan, and it was a BBC Studios production.